Alright, welcome back to Teaching Tuesdays. Today we're going to look at our first author of the colonial time period. If you look back at last week's episode, or the last Teaching Tuesday episode on this podcast, I talked about some of the background information about what made the colonial time period in American literature the colonial time period, and some of the themes and literary terms and some of the most popular / main authors that you see. So today we're going to look at the first one, actually the only one from that era that I usually do in the classroom, and that is Anne Bradstreet. If you listened last week, you got most of her history background that I'm going to talk about today, but I also wanted to reiterate that just in case you didn't get to it last week, or you didn't listen to last week's and you just wanted to listen to this week's. So here are some of her background bio that I talked about last week. So Anne Bradstreet, she was a poet in America in the colonial time period. She was born actually in England in 1612. She died at the age of 60 in 1672. She and her husband and their 8 kids came to America in 1630. And she was kind of overwhelmed by what she saw here in the New World, the sickness, the lack of food, and the primitive living conditions. And because of that, she struggled to be able to take care of her kids and her house and be able to write, but she, being a woman, was able to do that. Her brother-in-law actually had to assure everyone else in the place where they lived that she wasn't, even though they were struggling, she wasn't passing up on taking care of her children, her husband, and the house when she was writing. Because most people didn't believe her. Because in that time, women, it wasn't seen as acceptable or suitable for them to be able to write at all as a hobby, much less a career. But she made a go of it anyway. Many people consider her to be one of the very first American poets, and therefore making her one of the most popular authors in the colonial time, because one, she was considered to be the first poet, and on top of that, she was the first woman to write, much less write poetry. So that has given her lots of popularity. But since she was a woman, a lot of her writing was criticized because, as I said, it wasn't really suitable for a woman to be writing at all for any reason. And her ideas were often stolen by men who were writers to use for their own work. And she was, of course, not given any credit. In 1650, about 20-30 years after they moved to America, she had one book of poetry published. It was the only one in her lifetime to be published of her work. Everything else was published posthumously, which means after she died. But because of her work, we get a little hint into what the kind of normal speech patterns were in a way. Lots of people are able to understand her writings easily because she used more of the common language that we use today and talks about things that are still relevant today, as you'll see in a moment. So hang on tight, and we will go in and start reading two of her poems, and I'll talk a little bit about them. Alright, so the first poem written by Anne Bradstreet that I want to look at is the poem called Upon the Burning of Our House, July 10th, 1666. This was written, of course, 16 years after her first book of her only book of poems published in her lifetime was published. But I wanted to go ahead and read it because I really enjoy it. In silent night, when rest I took, for sorrow near, I did not look. I wakened was with thundering noise and piteous shrieks of dreadful voice. That fearful sound of fire and fire, let no man know, is my desire. I, starting up, the light did spy, and to my God my heart did cry to straighten me in my distress, and not to leave me succorless. Then, coming out, behold a space, the flame consumed my dwelling place. And when I could no longer look, I blessed his name that gave and took, that laid my goods now in the dust. Yea, so it was, and so 'twas just. It was his own, it was not mine, for be it that I should repine, he might of all justly bereft, but yet sufficient for us left. When by the ruins oft I passed, my sorrowing eyes aside did cast, and here and there the places spy where oft I sat and long did lie. Here stood that trunk, and there that chest, there lay that store I counted best. My pleasant things in ashes lie, and then behold them no more shall I. Under thy roof no guest shall sit, nor at thy table eat a bit. No pleasant talk shall e'er be told, nor things recounted done of old. No candle e'er shall shine in thee, nor bridegroom's voice e'er here heard shall be. In silence ever shalt thou lie. Adieu, adieu, all's vanity. Then straight I gan my heart to chide, and did thy wealth on earth abide? Didst fix thy hope on mouldering dust? The arm of flesh didst make thy trust? Rise up thy thoughts above the sky, that dunghill mist away may fly. Thou hast a house on high erect, framed by that almighty architect, with glory richly furnished, stands permanent, though this be fled. It's purchased and paid for, too, by him who hath enough to do, a price so vast as is unknown, yet by his gift is made thine own. There's wealth enough, I need no more. Farewell my pelf, farewell my store. The world no longer let me love, my hope and treasure lies above. So, that poem was actually based upon a true experience that the Bradstreets went through. Their house actually did burn down, which was probably why she wrote this poem, because it was one of those ways that helped her deal with what happened. So, if you couldn't really figure it out, there's lots of things about materialistic things in there. But before I actually get into talking about that, I wanted to just kind of give you a little overview of what's going to happen now. So now that I've read it, I want to go ahead and talk about it as I would in class. If you guys have any other thoughts or comments, please don't hesitate to share them. But I wanted to share my thoughts, views, and little tidbits that I have collected. So, as I've already said, she, in this poem, struggles with some of the materialistic tendencies that having your house and all your possessions burn would cause. Because, you know, she talked about walking through her house and everything, but we'll get more into that in just a minute. I'm just kind of wanting to sum it up for everyone. She mourns the loss of her earthly possessions, but then she, kind of mentally argues with herself, saying, you know, why are you, am I like this? This is just a house. Of course, it just now burned. Why am I being so upset about this? Because this isn't my eternal home. My eternal home is in heaven with God. After having watched her house burn, that, you know, God can give and God can take away. But there's one thing that I have, a house that's already been built by God that can never be taken away. It's in heaven. Whenever I die and go to heaven, it's going to be there. You know, even though here on earth, there's nothing left. I have nothing to actually, you know, tangentially feel, see, use. But, you know, that's kind of the gist of what she said in this poem. Well, Anne Bradstreet, since she is a woman, she uses a lot of sarcastic tones towards the norms of society. In this poem particularly, it's very sad, but also positive in the mood. So remember that tone and mood aren't always the same thing, even though they sometimes are seen as the same. So tone, she uses sometimes will use more sarcastically. Just saying, you know, as a woman, they were only supposed to perform the household tasks, you know, taking care of the house, taking care of the kids, taking care of their husbands. But, you know, in her poetry, she always tried to be sarcastic in that, at the society norms by poking fun at the men. And, in here, I think she talks about, you know, in those parts where she's questioning, trying to find where that was in the poem. So, then straight I again my heart to chide, and did thy wealth on earth abide? Didst fix thy hope on mouldering dust, the arm of flesh didst make thy trust. Rise up thy thoughts above the sky, thy dunghill mist away may fly. Thou hast a house, and talks about, you know, been purchased, paid for by him who has enough to do that. Sometimes, yes, that's the direct hint at, you know, God paid for it. He's already purchased, he's built it, he has the house ready, you know, by him who has enough to do it. Sometimes that might be a sarcastic nudge towards, you know, that men may not always be the best way, you know, version of, or way to go about getting materialistic things, that women can do it too. That might just be my own personal nudge at that, but that is could be seen as a sarcastic nudge if you don't want to look at it as a religious nod towards God provides everything for those who are his. But this poem primarily deals with mood and the tone being sad but also positive, in that, you know, at first she's sad and talks, her tone's kind of in a way sad too, as well, that, you know, her house burned down, she lost all of these possessions. Walking around her house, she kind of could say, oh, this is where this was and that's where that was, and all these memories are coming back. But then she has to, you know, try herself and be positive that, hey, all those things, these things I'm thinking about, I couldn't take them with me in death anyway, because I already have a house that God's provided for me, that, you know, it's in heaven, and I'm going to have that for eternity, so why should I be sad and mournful and, in a way, regretful that I don't longer have these things on earth? Yeah, so that's pretty much all I wanted to poke on with that. So, there is one more poem I want to talk about before we end today's episode. Alright, this next poem is called To My Dear and Loving Husband. If ever two were one, then surely we. If ever man loves by wife than thee, if ever wife was happy in a man, compare with me, you woman, if you can. I prize thy love more than whole mines of gold, or all the riches that the east doth hold. My love is such that rivers cannot quench, nor aught but the love from thee give recompense. Thy love is such I can no way repay, the heavens reward thee manifold, I pray. Then while we live in love, let's so preserve that when we live no more, we may live ever. So yeah, this poem is definitely much shorter than the other one, but in a way I like this one better. So I kind of want to paraphrase what this poem talks about, if you haven't been able to pick it up. Anne wrote this to her husband, Simon. It's one of the many that she wrote to him. To him, about him, XYZ. This poem is actually two lines short of being considered a traditional sonnet, like the sonnets that Shakespeare wrote. But it has that feeling that reminds us of those love sonnets or love poems that Shakespeare wrote a lot about, or some of his most famous ones are about. But to paraphrase, the poem talks about, you know, what happens when you meet that perfect person. Anne felt that her husband was the perfect guy, her one and only, and that she says all these things that people will still say to this day, you know, all of that ooey gooey lovey dovey stuff. At the very end, you know, those last two lines, then while we live in love, let's so preserve that when we live no more, we may yet live ever. You know, that she should suggest that continuing to live in love is pleasing to God. So still bringing in those Puritan themes of, you know, religion in there, so that, you know, he'll reward the couple with everlasting life after they die. You know, may live ever, forever, that kind of is what she means there, in a way, possibly. That's kind of what, you know, if you can't get the meaning behind this message, that connotation, you know, the meaning behind the literal meaning, you know, there's a perfect person for each one of us, and that we'll treasure them more than we could ever imagine, because, you know, prize thy love more than whole mines of gold, or all the riches that the east doth hold. My love is such that rivers cannot quench, nor aught but love for thee give recompense. It's kind of like, you know, reimbursement and everything. All that. She's such an advocate for finding love, finding a soulmate. And so, a theme, or, you know, that lesson, if you haven't picked up, you know, celebration of love between husband and wife continues to hold meaning today. Love is still cherished. Lots of people, even in modern times, this poem is very appealing to them because it's, one, short, two, it's written in somewhat plain English, and it has that basic rhyme and meter, so it's easy and kind of rolls off the tongue, feels good, it's short, easy to pick up on what this poem's about, what she's saying. And that's one reason why she's been so popular, is because all of her imagery, her comparisons, everything, they resonate with people, even though these poems are 300 plus years old. So that's what good writing does. Good poetry, good not fiction, nonfiction, whatever it may be. If it's done well and it can stand the test of time, like Shakespeare, then as a writer and as a reader, you've done well by finding what a good way to continue to write about the same olds that have been written about for hundreds and hundreds of years. So that's pretty much where I want to leave today, that no matter what the topic, who you are, where you are, your situation in life, you always have something worthy to say, even though someone might have already said it hundreds of years ago, or 6 months ago, or, you know, reading something that you've read hundreds of times before, you'll always find a new meaning in what you're reading. So that's kind of where I wanted to leave today. Hopefully you come back next week for the next lesson from the colonial time period.